Some interesting fissures have developed in the wall of U.S. tariffs. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. The Trump administration is now allowing leeway for U.S. companies to import more aluminum and steel without the higher tariffs. Quotas were one way around the new border penalties on metals, but some U.S. firms have apparently found themselves in a bind. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this from Washington. Now, we heard about exemptions from the steel and aluminum tariffs, Nancy.
And now there are exemptions from the quotas, too. When President Trump announced metal tariffs this year, some countries got a different deal. No extra taxes, but a limit on how much steel and aluminum they would send here. But now U.S. companies can ask for waivers to import extra steel or aluminum from South Korea, Brazil, and Argentina. They have to prove they can't find the type of steel or aluminum they need from an American producer. Commerce will also consider exemptions for U.S. companies that signed contracts for steel or aluminum imports from one of these countries before the quotas were announced, but then couldn't import the metals because the limits had already been reached.
I'm trying to understand this. Would the U.S. companies getting this exemption still have to pay tariffs?
If you're one of those companies I just mentioned that ordered steel or aluminum before the quotas and then couldn't get it, yes, you'd have to pay a tariff. But if a U.S. firm gets an exclusion from the quotas because it can't find the type of metal it needs from a U.S. producer, it wouldn't have to pay the tariff.
I see here there's already a backlog of thousands of requests by U.S. companies looking for tariff waivers. How much will these quota requests maybe slow things down?
That's unclear at this point, but you're right. That is quite a backlog of requests for tariff waivers, and it's a complicated process. Plus, the tariff exclusions expire after a year.
Nancy, thank you. We are just one day away from a deadline for Canada to work out terms to join the U.S. and Mexico on NAFTA 2.0. Among the most sweeping pieces of this, the North American content of cars and trucks that can escape tariffs. The deal encourages more North American parts and higher pay for workers. Now, we've been looking at this from many angles this week. Diane Swonk has been thinking about this as chief economist of the tax and advisory company Grant Thornton.
One of the things that jumps out is that the agreement is more regressive than progressive, but most importantly, they're hitting the supply chain. And so consumers will either have to pay a lot more money, or we could actually see much more automation in the auto industry to deal with the rising costs associated with this new version of NAFTA.
So you're talking about different possibilities about the way this plays out. But one scenario you're saying is that the robots win in this.
Exactly. This is a trade agreement that raises costs for U.S. automakers in the U.S. and suppliers in the U.S. And as those costs go up, they have to deal with them some way. They either pass them on to U.S. consumers or they replace workers with automation. And or in the very last case, they go produce vehicles somewhere else. It's really very complicated.
All right. The views of an economist, Diane Swonk, chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Diane, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Now to culture and the workplace. American orchestras are really white. For instance, Black and Latino musicians make up less than 5% of orchestra players. Now, the National Alliance for Audition Support, that's 700 orchestras plus several nonprofits, has launched a training and funding project to get classical musicians of color into the auditions. From WLRN in Miami, Nadege Green observed the first training workshop.
Gabrielle Skinner is in a coaching session for auditions at the New World Symphony in Miami Beach. She's one of 18 musicians participating. Skinner plays an excerpt from Beethoven's Fifth Symphony on her viola. Skinner plays with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra in New York. She's Latina and says sometimes she's treated like an outsider in classical music spaces.
I've had an experience of people being like, oh, she only got this because she's not white.
Musicians typically audition for orchestras behind a screen. That was introduced in the 1970s because orchestras were hiring so few women. The idea, judge blind and consider musicians solely on what they sound like. The screen did help get more women into orchestras, but it did very little for broader diversity. The challenges for Black and Latino musicians start long before they get to an audition.
Socioeconomic disparities. This is not a cheap field.
Samuel Thompson is a freelance musician in Baltimore. He's African American. And Thompson, who plays the violin, says as his love for the art form grew, so did the cost.
Not everyone has parents who can take out a second mortgage to buy their kid an instrument.
Professional quality instruments cost thousands of dollars. There's also the cost to travel for auditions.
But sometimes that could mean flying to LA to take an audition where maybe you play a minute and maybe you don't advance.
Jania Stegall is with Sphinx, a Detroit-based nonprofit that trains classical musicians of color. And she's the project manager for the National Alliance for Audition Support.
A lot of the time, being more successful in auditions means just going out and taking as many auditions as possible.
The Alliance received a $1.8 million grant for audition coaching sessions like the one in Miami Beach and travel expenses for orchestra auditions around the country. In Miami, I'm Nadege Green for Marketplace.
It emerged today that Europeans have a lot of opinions when it comes to moving clocks back and forth twice a year. The European Commission is looking into this, and it got a pile of responses, 4.6 million online comments. The EC isn't saying if the responses tilted for or against switching the clocks. In the late 1960s, Britain ended British summertime for 3 years, but ended bringing it back after complaints about the dark winter mornings. Imagine Aberdeen, Scotland on, say, January 3rd or something. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.